weiter sind wir 3,1 Kilometer vor Dorf. Da treffen wir den Anthony Murphy, bekannter Autor, vor allem über Spoyne Valley. Und das letzte Buch meines Wissens ist das Mythical Island. Das haben wir auch gekauft. Und das war auch der Grund, warum ich Anthony dann angeschrieben hatte vor 2 Tagen. Und er war dann spontan dazu bereit, ein Interview zu machen. Und schlug dann auch vor, dass wir uns dann am Dorf, vor Ort.
Jetzt ist das Problem, wir sind sehr spät dran. Es ist 9:30 Uhr abends.
Ja.
Weil wir nicht aus Belfast weggekommen sind. Da waren wir heute jetzt noch bei der Titanic Belfast und ich hatte noch ein Shooting. Das Model war leider etwas spät. Das heißt, bei uns wurde es dann insgesamt etwas spät. Die Sonne ist jetzt gerade am Untergehen. Jetzt hoffen wir mal, dass wir noch was sehen.
Ja, nein, also du musst jetzt die nächste rechts, also da vorne bei dem Hof rechts. Also wir versuchen uns hier gerade zurechtzufinden. Google sei Dank. Was auch spannend ist, wenn man hier auf Google Maps schaut, da sieht man schon die ein oder anderen Dinge von oben, die sehr wohl zeigen, dass es hier eine besondere Gegend war. Also es gibt hier verschiedene Passage Tombs und auch verschiedene Cairns und Ringforts und so. Also eine sehr beliebte Gegend von unseren Vorfahren. Da links. Und wir haben echt massiv Glück mit dem Wetter heute. Also es war jetzt heute Morgen ziemlich bewölkt, hat dann aber um 3 aufgeklärt. Und dann da vorne rechts der Kurve folgen. Ja, wir kommen jetzt von hinten irgendwie ran.
Doch, die pusht ins Auto.
2 Minuten noch und dann treffen wir Anthony. Also jetzt geht's durch den Kuh-Einstieg. Uiuiuiui. Und den Weg entlang. Mit Drohnen darf man hier nicht fotografieren. So. Ich bin jetzt gerade da. Eieieiei. Quietschendes Tor. So. So, Dorf ist ein Hügelgrab. Und es hat sehr gelitten unter den Ausgrabungen von einem Herr Frith, der einen riesigen Krater durch seine Ausgrabungen hier gemacht hat. Es ist auch in der Mythologie bekannt, soll zur Zeit der Sommersonnenwende gebaut worden sein. Da gibt es eine Geschichte drüber, ich denke, da wird er uns sicherlich auch noch ein bisschen was erzählen. Hello!
Hello!
Nice to meet you! So, ich gehe jetzt den Berg hoch. Eieieiei. So, hello, we're in Dorf today and we are meeting Anthony Murphy and he is an author of several books and we're going around the monument while we are talking and now I let him introduce himself.
Well, I'm Anthony Murphy. I am a tour guide, an author, photographer, mythologist, citizen archaeologist. I don't know. There's many things you could say about me. Hopefully all good. I live in the Boyne Valley. I was born in Drogheda and I've lived there all my life. Drogheda is the nearest town to the great monuments of Brún a Bunaidh. It's about 4 or 5 kilometres from here. And about 24 years ago, I took a pretty major interest in the monuments and the mythology of the monuments. Thinking at that time that there were people who were much more expert than I about archaeology and history and mythology, never thinking for a moment that I would ever make any significant contribution, you know, just as an interested amateur. And I stand before you now, 24 years later, having made several fairly significant contributions to our understanding of Brún a Bunaidh, which is great. For me, it's been a wonderful journey. I published 9 books. Some of those are non-fiction, some of those are fiction. All based around the myths and the monuments and the landscape. mostly of this area, but in a broader sense, Ireland as well, because you can't really study, say, Brúna Bonia without incorporating other aspects, other monument complexes, you mm-hmm. know, from the Neolithic period in particular, you know.
So what brought you here, direct to that tomb here? Why do you think this one is so special we are on now?
Well, Douth is special because it is the only one of the three great mega mounds of the Brúna Bonia complex that hasn't been excavated in modern times, that hasn't been restored, and is not on the official tourist itinerary. So people who come to the visitor centre are brought on a bus to Nowth and Newgrange, but Douth is just left all on its own to sit in the landscape quietly. And the major attraction for it, from my point of view, is the ability to come here any time of the day or night, mm-hmm. any day of the year, any night of the year, because it's never locked. And it's a most beautiful place to spend time. It's hardly Absolutely. Ever it's hardly ever busy, you know. Quite often you find that you're the only person here when you come. And how many people can boast or can claim to be able to visit a monument that was built? We don't know exactly when Douth was built, but mm-hmm. Newgrange was built 5,200 years ago. So it's likely to be actually slightly older than Newgrange. Mm-hmm. Because archaeologists actually believe Douth was the first of the three great monuments to be built, and Newgrange was the last. Actually, I'll just, if mm-hmm. you stand here, I'll show you Newgrange. Those trees grew and blocked it. But you should just see Newgrange there.
The white.
Yeah. So we think that Douth was the first to be built, Nowth was next, and Newgrange was last. And people, you know, because Newgrange is very well known for the solstice alignment, and because the tour goes there, people think, you know, Newgrange was the first to be built, but we actually think it was the last, and Douth mm-hmm. was actually the first one to be built. And actually, Nowth is bigger than Newgrange. It has more curbstones, more decorated art, more artwork on the curbstones and in the interior, more satellite mounds around it. It has two chambers mm-hmm. on opposite sides, east and west, versus Newgrange's one. Douth is something of a mystery still because of the fact that it hasn't been explored in modern times. Now you'll see that there's a very large crater in the mm-hmm. in the monument. And that's because in the 1840s, a group of very well-to-do treasure hunters came here looking for probably gold mm-hmm. and just dug, you know, a big trench in through the side of the cairn.
It's very massive, yeah.
Yeah, and found nothing that they considered of any consequence. And after mm-hmm. 2 summers of digging, they abandoned the place. And this dig occurred at the time of the Great Famine in Ireland, the potato famine. So most people were starving and had nothing to eat. But there were some wealthy gentlemen who were engaged in treasure hunt, which goes to show you, I suppose, the difference between the peoples at the time, that some mm-hmm. people had that luxury of being able to go on treasure hunting expeditions into ancient monuments when everybody else was starving, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things about Douth. And the other thing is the story of Douth, which actually pertains to a famine. And the story is very brief. It says that a king whose name was Bresel Bodibad, that's Irish, mm-hmm. Bodibad meaning lacking in cattle, that during his reign there was a what they call a moraine or a famine on the cattle, so that there was only one bull and 7 cows left in Ireland. And for some reason during this cattle famine, King Bresel decided to bring all the men of Ireland to this spot to build him a monument from which he could pass to heaven. Mm-hmm. Now it says specifically all the men, doesn't mention women at all, so we can only presume the women were doing something more important. you know,
yeah.
like probably feeding themselves and the kids, yeah. you know. So in order for them to build the tower, it was called, like the Tower of Nimrod, which is this myth was written down probably by a Christian scribe in the monasteries. Mm-hmm. And that scribe didn't like the pagan aspect, so he tried to make it more like something from the Bible. But anyway, the men asked for endless day so that they could build the monument of Douth. And the king had a sister who was a very powerful sorceress or druidess. She cast a spell on the sun to make it stand still in the sky, bringing the endless day, and the men built the monument. But at a certain point in the story, the king he takes a fancy to his sister, and they commit incest, and as a result of that the spell is broken and a sudden darkness descends upon the place. And the men say to the king, well, you promised us endless day for the construction, and since day is gone and night has come, we're leaving this place. Mm-hmm. And the last line of the poem says, forevermore this place shall be known as Dua, which is the Irish for darkness. And that's mm-hmm. where Douth gets its name from. It's an anglicised or English version of that name, Douth, which means darkness. And I think the endless day of that story relates to the time of summer solstice, which we're coming fast upon here now as we stand here mm-hmm. in 2 weeks' time. And at this time of year, at this latitude, which is about 53 and a half degrees north of the equator, the sun doesn't set far enough below the horizon at midsummer for nighttime to end. So what you get is an eternal twilight through the night. It doesn't ever get fully dark. You can see the stars, but you have enough light to see anything you're doing. You know, and I think the sister, the king's sister, she made the sun stand still, and the standstill, of course, is the solstice. Mm-hmm. It's the standing still of the rising and setting positions, which are constantly moving up and down the horizon during the year, but stop only in two places at midwinter and at midsummer before mm-hmm. returning, you know, back along the horizon. And I think that's what the story is related to, the time of the summer solstice, and the sudden darkness possibly related to a total eclipse. Mm-hmm. And there's a stone on the eastern side of the mound which I can show you.
Okay,
I know, it's a podcast, so
you're
oh, brilliant, great.
That's good.
Well, there's a stone down there that contains depictions that look like a solar eclipse, mm-hmm. almost as if the megalithic art is related to the story.
The Neolithic art is very picturesque. It means you have nature depicted, and then you can really have a picture of that time, right?
Well, the difficulty with Irish megalithic art is, unlike, for instance, megalithic art in Iberia, which contains very clear depictions of animals and, you know, natural life, the megalithic art of Ireland and, well, specifically Bruna Bonia, where we are, is quite abstract. A lot of symbols that don't immediately seem pictographic. So we have everything from spirals and circles, arcs, zigzags, diamonds, lozenges, you know, all things that have no immediate sort of obvious relevance to natural life. However, there are such things as what look like, for instance, full moons and crescent moons, circles mm-hmm. and crescents. There are what look like stars on some of the megalithic art mm-hmm. here. There are what look like depictions of the sun. Of course, we can't confirm that, because these places are 5,000 years old, and the stories about them were only written down in the Middle Ages mm-hmm. by monks in the monasteries of Ireland. Mm-hmm. And not all monks, by the way. Some of them were lay scribes. They weren't necessarily Christian men, but all of those things. So if you think about it, the stories were only written down about 4,000 years after the monuments were built, and we're now 5,000 years. So the stories are very young in terms of when they were written. But the big question is, did they survive through that long period of time entirely in oral form? And my answer to that question is, I think so, yes.
Do you think more in songs or in poems? Or?
Well, we have a mixture of material in the manuscripts. Some of it is prose and some of it is metrical verse. And we have all sorts of traditions from medieval times about the training of bards. The bard had to endure rigorous training that lasted for years, that required him to learn vast tracts of material before he could profess his trade, as it were. So with that in mind, I'm thinking that because of the emphasis on that and because of the nature of the public performance of it, certainly some of it would have been sung rather than just spoken, you know. But it's really intriguing. Some of the myths about these monuments, I'm specifically talking about the big monuments, the monuments of Brúna Bonnia. Mm-hmm. Some of the myths contain or appear to contain reference to aspects of those monuments that archaeology and modern science is proving to be true. Mm-hmm. So the story of incest in the Douth story, in the Douth legend, and there are stories pertaining to Newgrange that have themes of incest in them. Well, it is a curious thing that in 2020, just a few years ago, a paper was published in which geneticists studied a bone that had been found in the chamber of Newgrange mm-hmm. during the excavations. Mm-hmm. They carbon dated it. First of all, it's a man's part of a man's skull. They carbon dated it, so they dated it to 5,200 years ago, mm-hmm. which is exactly the time we're told the monument was built. And they found that when they ran the genome, they found that he had first degree incestuous parentage, which in plain English means that his parents were probably brother and sister.
Okay.
Exactly as so, the story suggests. Mm-hmm. And it's curious about Newgrange too, that there's a story there about the deity, the chief deity, Dagda, who's the sun god, taking a fancy to Bowen, and he enters into Newgrange in order to conceive the child Angus. And in order to do that, they make the sun stand still in the sky. So there's the standstill again, except mm-hmm. for this time it's winter. Mm-hmm. It's midwinter sunrise. And, you know, it's only in recent decades archaeology has, you know, well, Professor Michael O'Kelly excavated Newgrange in the 1960s and 1970s, and it was restored to how it would have been before that sort of gradual collapse and degradation. And he became the first person, probably since prehistory, actually, to witness the sunlight entering the chamber of Newgrange. And yet, there's a story written down in the Middle Ages talking about the sun god entering the mound as if to impregnate the earth. And while this is happening, the sun is standing still in the sky, which is exactly what happens at solstice. So you've got two of the major mounds have this theme of the coming together of male and female in conjunction with the standing still of the sun. And I think that Newgrange's midwinter solstice and Douth relates to midsummer solstice. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. But I can't prove it.
Because the crate is there.
Well, partly because of that, but mainly because of this vast gap of time mm-hmm. between when the monument was built and when the story was written down. You know, mm-hmm. it's a long time for a story to survive. Mm-hmm. But I think it's eminently possible that that's the case.
Okay.
How else do we account for it? As I say, I keep saying the science is gradually proving all the stories to be true. To some degree. Because some of the stories are quite fantastic, you know. You know?
Yeah, but here we're in the middle of Irish mythology. So what does the Boyne Valley and the tombs have to do with mythology here?
Actually, the importance of the Boyne monuments is that they are quite strongly associated with the people we call, well, they're not people, they're the deities that we call the Tuatha De Danann. So in Irish mythology, over the last half century or so, experts who have studied it have identified four distinct periods of mythology, the earliest of which is the what we call the mythological cycle. That's the one involving the gods and their wonderful exploits. Then we have the Ulster cycle, which is a lot about the warriors and the warrior bands, you know, these bands of warriors, the most famous being the likes of Cuchulainn. Actually, he's the single most famous. Mm-hmm. Then we have the Finn cycle, which is sort of similar because Finn leads the Fianna, who are a band of warriors. And then finally, we have the cycle of the kings. And this is all mythology pertaining to the High Kings of Tara, a lot of it pertaining to the High Kings of Tara. And on the distant horizon there, you'll mm-hmm. see where I'm pointing to. There's a clump of trees.
Yeah.
Well, that those are the trees around the churchyard on the hill of Tara. That's Tara there. And for a long time, the tradition was, the belief of people was, that the High Kings of Tara were buried at Brú na Bóinne. Now, that may be true, but modern archaeology has demonstrated that, in fact, these monuments are much, much older than the era in which the kings lived. So the kings straddled that period from, you know, the Iron Age into the early medieval period. So straddling BC into AD or BCE into CE, you know, the centuries before Christ, as it were, and the centuries after. So we know now that they lived a long time after these monuments were built. So that we don't know about that tradition. But the kings are the last, but the gods are the first. And the gods are said, well, Newgrange was said to have been built by the Dagda.
Okay.
You know, now we know it was built by human beings.
Yeah, sure.
But the story has it that it was built by the Dagda. And he was the owner of the monument. And, of course, he has very solar attributes. He's described as Gerugdirk, which means the red-eyed. He controls the weather and the harvest. And then, as I say, the big event, which is the conception of his son, occurs with the sun shining into Newgrange, or at least that's what I think that depiction is, you know. Mm-hmm. So that is the first sort of period. Actually, in the origin tales, if you go back far enough, the monks, when they wrote down some of the Irish myths, they tried to concoct or imagine a sort of a biblical origin for the Irish, in which they said that the first person to arrive in Ireland was Kezair, who was a granddaughter of Noah who built the ark in Genesis, and that she had been forbidden access to the ark and told by Noah to go to a land where there were no people living because there'd be no sin there and it wouldn't be punished by God. And she came here with 3 men and 50 women, and they all drowned because the flood still came. Mm-hmm. And only one survived, and he was Fintan Mac Bóchra. So there are sort of hazy origins which we're not sure how much of that has been influenced by Christian, the scribe, the hand of a Christian scribe. But the Tuatha Dé Danann were eventually defeated by mortal men who had come from Spain, the Milesians, the Gael. That's the origin of the Irish people, according to our oldest traditions. But you see, the Dé Danann were never killed. The monks tried to say that they were humans and that they died mortal deaths and were buried. Mm-hmm. But the vernacular, the ordinary folk, never believed that. The Tuatha Dé Danann went into their she, the she being the Irish word for these monuments.
Okay.
They went into them. But of course, they're liminal. They're like portals between this world and other worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So they're constantly able to come back out again. And so the monks wanted to kill them off and say, they died and that's the end. Good luck. That's in the past. But ordinary people believe that they're still able to come out.
Okay.
You know?
And how do people react then? If you think about millions of tourists going into those buildings.
That's a very good, will we walk?
Yeah.
I want to bring you down and show you that stone. That's a very good question, because there were very few human remains found in Newgrange. Now, all the human remains that are found in these passage tombs are very, very fragmented, very small, minute fragments of bone. Some cremated, some uncremated. And Professor O'Kelly found that there were only about 5 people buried inside Newgrange. And of course, this single individual man who had, incestuous parentage, well, that has led to the suggestion that there was something like a dynastic elite, a family elite, you know, based on incest.
A bit similar like the Egyptians.
Exactly right. Exactly like in Egypt. Now, if that's the case, and of course we can't say for sure whether that was the case, but if you think about it, you know, anywhere, and this is something that the archaeologists have said repeatedly, anywhere around the world where you see, you know, monumental architecture, like huge construction, On a gigantic scale. Remember, these monuments were built in the Stone Age, before metal tools, before machinery, before the wheel, you know. This is hard labour. Anywhere you see that, you usually have a structured and hierarchical society.
It's like the big fish that you have from the pond, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. So that all goes together if you think about the Douth myth, mm-hmm. in which the king basically commands all the men in Ireland to come and build him a mount. He sounds like a bit of a megalomaniac. Mm-hmm. And you know, that might be just in fitting with what happened. Because it's very difficult to imagine a scenario in which the monuments were built where it was in any way haphazard. Mm-hmm. All of the material, the stone for all these monuments, in the case of Newgrange, some of that stone is brought from a long distance away.
It's a lot of organised.
It has to have been organised and coordinated. So we're just passing here the entrance to the southern chamber of Douth, which aligns with the setting sun in midwinter, which is interesting because of, I was talking about the mythology pertaining to Endless Day, which would appear to be about summer solstice, mm-hmm. but there is a chamber here that admits the sun on the eve of the longest night. Mm-hmm. So it's been suggested that people would have gathered here to watch the sun go down, illuminate the chamber here, that begins the longest night of the year, and then they would have processed down to Newgrange, about a mile away or a couple of kilometres, and then waited there to greet the dawn of the midwinter, mm-hmm. the shortest day. So the beginning of the longest night and then the beginning of the shortest day, you know. But that's quite curious. I have repeatedly suggested that at some point in the future, archaeologists may discover a chamber somewhere in Douth that has an alignment towards either summer solstice sunrise or summer sunset because of what the myth says. And because I believe passionately that the mythology does indeed offer us an insight into the monuments. But of course, not many people agree with me on that. Mm-hmm. So I suppose in the fullness of time, we might find that out and it would be interesting, you know. Mm. But what was I saying about Newgrange? I was saying about the man. Yeah, there were only 5 people buried in Newgrange. Your question was, you know, what would they think about all these tourists coming? I think they'd be horrified to see the hundreds of people that go inside Newgrange every day and every week. Because I honestly think that the chamber of Newgrange was very sacred. And only certain people were allowed in there, you know. So I think that's something, if they could see it, that would perhaps annoy them quite a lot, you know. I think it would vex them greatly, mm-hmm. actually, mm-hmm. you know.
And as you see here, the portal inside is quite small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this chamber is not like the chamber of Newgrange. The passage here is quite short, mm-hmm. and opens up into a circular chamber. And so it's only about a third, maybe a quarter. Actually, it's probably about a quarter of the total length of the Newgrange passage and chamber. And one of the results of that is it admits a wider range of sunsets shining into the chamber. In fact, a study carried out in recent years by Anne-Marie Moroney, who's a local retired school teacher, she determined that the sun can shine in from November right through December and January to almost February, you know, which is the entire period of winter, mythologically speaking, beginning at Samhain, which we continue to kind of celebrate today as Halloween, the beginning of winter, mm-hmm. and Imbolc, which would have been the old celebration of what we would call now St. Brigid's Day. It's been mm-hmm. Christianized, you know, at the beginning of February. Mm-hmm. That whole range is covered by that mm-hmm. chamber, which is fascinating.
Did they believe in life after death? Because if you put in the sun as a light into a place where that people are buried, maybe it should be a passageway then?
Well, that's what a lot of scholars have suggested over the years, that, yeah, part of what was happening here was the placement of the fragmented bone remains into the chambers. And that the light of the sun, in the case of Newgrange, and maybe Douth as well, that the light of the sun shines in on certain days and at certain times of the year, and that the souls of the dead are brought on the light beam off into some heavenly other world, you know. Now, curiously, Irish mythology is full of other worlds. So we have, you know, our most famous otherworld is the one called Chiern an Onóg, which literally means the land of the youth, or, you know, the land where nobody gets old.
Oh, that's nice. And that's what I do.
Yeah. And there's one called Chiern an Mio, which means the land of the living or the land of the ever living.
Okay.
And then there's one called Tir Tarngire, which is the land of promise. And there's one called Mai Mel, which is the plain of happiness.
So, well, that's quite similar to the medieval thought of what's called the land where you get a lot of to eat and you have those wonderful young people like you see in the Cranach pictures.
Yeah. Well, you see this notion of, you know, life after death, of course, is not at all peculiar to the ancient Irish, and of course, it's a universal thing. Since the beginning of conscious thought among humans, we've always wondered the biggest question of all that every human eventually gets to ask is what happens to us when we die. And there are lots of people who believe nothing happens to us, we just die and that's it. There are lots of people who believe that we go to some heaven or some Elysium, some Tir na n-Óg. Then again, there are other people who believe in reincarnation. And we have tales in mythology. In fact, one specifically related to Newgrange, in which there is metempsychosis or reincarnation.
Really? Okay.
Etain, yeah, the wooing of Etain. And Etain, survives and is reborn and lives again, as it were, another life. And her lover from her first life, Midger, pursues her into her next life, which is 1,000 years later, which is an indication, perhaps, of belief in reincarnation. And it has been said, and I don't know the exact source of it, but it has been said that Irish warriors, especially in early medieval times, and kings, were not at all afraid of death because they were absolutely certain that they were going to be reborn. And it has also been suggested that one of the reasons that cremation predominates is because of the belief was that if we die, we want to be cremated to make sure that our soul doesn't come back into our body, that it goes on to do what it needs to do, you know, enter the next body, as it were, or go to the next life.
Hallo meine Lieben, ich bin Chris vom Podcast Erlebnis Irland. Dieses Mal kommt das Intro quasi mit dem Outro, weil wir haben schon tatsächlich bei der Anfahrt zu diesem Interview etwas aufgenommen. Und so hat es tatsächlich früher auch mal bei uns regelmäßig ausgesehen, wenn wir unterwegs waren zu einem Interview oder zu einem Ansprechpartner. Wir hatten immer unsere Terminkalender so vollgeballert, dass wir wie das weiße Kaninchen in Alice im Wunderland immer zu spät waren, immer eine halbe Stunde zu spät. Das war dieses Mal Gott sei Dank nicht der Fall. Das Interview mit Anthony Murphy war tatsächlich das eine, zu dem wir wirklich viel zu spät dran waren. Und zwar mindestens 1,5 Stunden, weil wir eben, wie ich ja schon vorhin mal gesagt habe, zu spät aus Belfast weggekommen sind. Wir sind quasi am Mullins Head gewesen, im nördlichsten Zipfel Irlands in Donegal, und sind dann quasi über Belfast, dort mit 2 Terminen, runtergestürzt nach Drogheda ins Boyne Valley und von dort noch nach Wexford ins Hotel. Es war dann 2:30, als wir dann endlich angekommen sind. In der Zwischenzeit sind wir nach einem Plattenreifen in Cherbourg auch wieder in Deutschland angekommen. Auch das war dann nochmal spannend. Das habe ich dann tatsächlich nicht mehr gebraucht. Aber auch das haben wir dann noch hingekriegt und sind dann tatsächlich noch wieder rechtzeitig hier in Deutschland angekommen. Wir haben in diesem Jahr ganz, ganz viele spannende Menschen kennengelernt. Und ich muss sagen, also wir haben immer einen gewissen Teil an Themen, die wir in Deutschland vorbereiten. Aber es ergeben sich dann immer wieder sehr spannende Möglichkeiten, die nicht vorhersehbar sind. Darum war Corona für uns auch relativ schwierig, weil oft ist es so, man trifft einen Ansprechpartner, das war bei uns tatsächlich auch so bei einem Interview, und der hat einem dann nochmal einige spannende Kontakte und Leute. Und so kam das dann auch, dass wir statt 12 Episoden, die wir eigentlich fürs Jahr geplant haben, jetzt schon bei 24 sind. Wir werden versuchen, tatsächlich jetzt im zweiwöchigen Turnus rauszukommen. Mal sehen, ob wir das durchhalten. Wir haben noch ein paar Episoden vom letzten Jahr, weil wir etwas im Stress waren nach Corona, alles wieder angelaufen ist. Also wir werden versuchen, zweiwöchig jetzt quasi rauszukommen. Auch diese Episode oder das Interview mit Anthony Murphy ist zweiteilig, weil wir einfach nicht über die halbe Stunde raus wollen. Mit Intro und Outro wird es aber wahrscheinlich doch ein bisschen länger. Aber grundsätzlich wollen wir in dem Bereich bleiben, weil ich einfach festgestellt habe oder weil wir einfach festgestellt haben, dass diese Podcasts dann, diese Episoden auch sehr lang waren und unter Umständen auch etwas langweilig. Fee hat es ja auch schon vor dem Interview gesagt. Anthony Murphy, ganz zufällig haben wir in einer Bücherei eines seiner Bücher gekauft, und Fee hat ihn dann ganz einfach angeschrieben über seine Website, und auch so, das war relativ improvisiert, der Kontakt. Wir fanden das Buch spannend, wir haben es gekauft in Clifton. Wir kaufen immer Bücher, wenn wir unterwegs sind, die spannend sein könnten. Dazu gehört auch Geschichte, Mythologie, Legenden. Wir haben auch eben die Troubles-Bücher gekauft. Wir bringen immer kiloweise, also mindestens 50, 60 Kilo Bücher mit. Und da haben wir jetzt ein Buch gekauft, das klang spannend. Und Fee hat einfach Anthony Murphy über das Internet angeschrieben, und prompt nachts um 10:30, wieder 10:30, wie beim Interview, hat er sich dann gemeldet, und dann haben wir eben den Termin vereinbart. Also manche Sachen sind einfach relativ spontan und würden, Recherche eben, und würden eben nicht funktionieren, wenn wir das von zu Hause aus machen würden. Ja. Wir haben auch Interviews gemacht übers Internet, aber die waren halt qualitativ lange nicht so, wie wenn man vor Ort ist. Jetzt aber zu Anthony Murphy. Er hat mehrere Bücher geschrieben, Fiktion, Non-Fiction. Und ihr wisst ja, dass Fee und ich auch hier aktiv sind in einem Museum, im Römischen Freilichtmuseum hier in Hechingenstein. Und es gibt halt immer wieder dann mit Archäologen und gewissen Institutionen Diskussionen über die Interpretation von Funden und von Umständen. Und die Archäologie argumentiert eigentlich auf diese Art und Weise: Wir haben keine Beweise gefunden, also ist das nicht so. Auch wir haben das Thema eben schon des Öfteren in Stein gehabt. Wir haben das auch sonst auf unseren Recherchen oft gehabt. Evidence, Michael Gibbons, sein Lieblingswort, als wir mit ihm diskutiert haben, ein Interview geführt haben, Evidence. Für Spekulation ist relativ wenig Platz. Und Menschen wie der Journalist Anthony Murphy erlauben sich dann eine gewisse weitere Freiheit der Interpretation. Also er zieht Parallelen, ja, wo manche Archäologe vielleicht sagen würden, Nee, geht nicht. Andererseits wird trotzdem auch mal spekuliert. Und ja, wie gesagt, also ich tue mir da immer dann schwer, das auch letztendlich dann auszubremsen und zu sagen, ja, oder ja oder nein. Auf jeden Fall, die Vergleiche, die er zieht, sind schon aus meiner Sicht relativ bemerkenswert. Und das ist auch der Grund, warum wir dann ihn in diesen Podcast eingeladen haben. Und wir haben uns sehr gefreut, dass er dieser Einladung auch gefolgt ist. Wenn euch das Ganze interessiert, er verfügt natürlich auch über eine Homepage. Er ist ja auch Guide, also sprich, man kann sich das Ganze auch anhören. Und er hat einen Online-Shop, wo er auch gewisse Dinge vertreibt, seine Bücher, dann Triesgelen und alles Mögliche zum Thema Kelten und zum Thema Geschichte, keltische und irische Geschichte. Ich verlinke euch das aber alles in den Shownotes. Dann könnt ihr, wenn ihr Lust habt, euch mal da reinhören, reinschauen in dem Fall. Ich hoffe, dass euch dieser Podcast gefallen hat. Wir werden auch noch eine zweite Episode bringen über dieses Interview, aber erst mit ein bisschen Abstand zu dem Thema dann oder zu dem. Es werden in der Zwischenzeit nochmal 3-4 andere Podcasts erscheinen. Ich hoffe eben, dass dir dieser Podcast gefallen hat und ich wünsche dir oder diese Episode gefallen hat und ich wünsche dir einen ganz tollen Tag. Bis bald, dein Chris.